Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yuma Daf Mem Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin our shiur at the top line of Daf Mem Gimel. We gave an introduction to this section of Gemara at the end of our previous shiur. So, with that in mind, we will be continuing looking into the psukim that deal with the preparing of the pora aduma, the red heifer which is slaughtered and whose carcass is burnt on the Mount of Olives. As you can see, we have a double underlining marking scheme which we started last time, which highlights the psukim that we'll be focusing on. And to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, you'll notice little words that we've put in diamonds. The top line, you have Shechita, a few lines later, Kabbalah Saddam, and a number of lines after that, Asifa, Kiddush, Hazah. These are different procedures or actions that pertain to the preparing of the Porah Duma, etc. So, we continue looking at the psukim, bearing in mind everything we said in the previous year, how the progression of the psukim in the parsha of Porah Aduma is not one of a consistent nature. In some cases you have mashma moitzi miad mashma, where a second posuk will teach something that runs counter in a certain manner of speaking to that which preceded it, and other psukim that continue in the vein of that which had been mentioned earlier, which we refer to as mashma memela. These are terms that we spent time at the end of our previous shiur. So we continue at the top line, v'shochat oisa. The pasuk says that the red heifer shall be slaughtered, and it also says lifonov. It'll be slaughtered in the presence of Elozer, the Kohen. And we learn from this, v'shochat osa is a limiting expression, means you shall slaughter it and it alone. Shelo yishchoit achires ima, that you don't shecht, you don't slaughter another animal together with the Porah Aduma. Lifonov, that word, so this we've seen before. L'rav, according to Rav, the word tells me, shelo yasiach daito mimeno, that the one who is preparing the Porah Aduma should not lose his concentration on what he is doing. He should be focused and concentrating on it. L'Shmuel, according to Shmuel, that used the word lefonov for a different purpose, it's as follows. Shiehe zar shochet ve'lozer roya. The pasuk says, v'shochat oisa lefonov, and the red heifer shall be slaughtered in front of the Kohen. So lefonov implies that the Kohen is not the one who is doing the Shechita, but even a non-Kohen is suitable for doing the Shechita. The pasuk says, v'lokach elozer ha-Kohen midomo be'etzba'oi. L'Shmuel, according to Shmuel, whereas just before this, in the Shechita, a non-Kohen was acceptable, here, la'adure le'lozer. As far as the receipt of the blood, the reference to Elozer, v'lokach Elozer ha-Kohen, is telling me that now the Kohen is brought into the picture in terms of the actions. So here's a case of a posuk undoing that which had been mentioned previously. According to Shmuel, the previous pasuk was saying, was giving license to a non-Kohen. Here in this pasuk, this is what they call mashma motzi miad mashma. Here it's undoing the mashmos of the previous pasuk. Of course, this is a different action. This is the action of receiving the blood after it has been slaughtered. So that la'adure la'azur means returning it now, action-wise, to Elazar. Elazar is expected, Elazar representative of the Kohen, he is expected to do the action of receiving the blood. Le'rav, according to Rav, the Pasuk says, V'lokach Elazar ha'kohen, that he has to do the taking, the receiving of the blood. But according to Rav, only a Kohen was able to do the previous step. A Zar was not allowed to do the Shechita. So here we have almost a repeat of that idea, that a Zar is not allowed to do the Kabbalah. So the Gemara points out, L'Rav, according to Rav, have a mute achar mute. You have a back-to-back restriction or restrictive type verse, limitation is a better word, a back-to-back limitation verses. The Shechita verse indicated limiting Shechita to the Kohen. The Kabbalah Sadam verse limiting to the Kohen. And there is a rule, the Ein Miut Achar Miut Elo L'Rabois. When you have a double limitation, in fact you are including others. Da'filu Kohen Hedyot. Not only Elazar, who represented a high official Kohen, but even a common Kohen is suitable for Kabbalas Hadam. The Loka Hakain Eitz Erez V'Eza V'Shni Toloas L'Shmuel. According to Shmuel, the reference to a Kohen in this Pasuk is the Afilu B'Kohen Hedyot. In the previous stage, Kabbalas Hadam, so there, according to Shmuel, we brought in Elazar to do the Kabbalah Sadam. Elazar is representative of a high level official Kohen. In this Pasuk, Shmuel is saying even a common Kohen can do the casting of the Eitz Erez, the Ezov, these three additional ingredients into the fire. And Rashi points out that this is another example of mashma motzi miad mashma, whereas in the previous pasuk the Kohen reference was to the high official Kohen, as was represented by Elazar HaKohen. Here we are saying otherwise. For this action, even a common Kohen. LeRav, now according to Rav, that Kabbalas Hadam was already suitable to be done by a common Kohen. So what's the purpose of mentioning a Kohen here for? So according to Rav, I need to be told that a Kohen is necessary. Sagadai Dechamina, without this posuk, I would have thought, Kevan Delav Gufa Depora Ninu, since the throwing of these three ingredients, the Eitz Erez, Ezov, and Shni Tolas, is not part of the animal's body. It's not gufa de par, it's not part of the red heifer itself. These are outside ingredients. Lo liboi kohen. I would think that you don't need a kohen whatsoever. Komash malon. Hence, this pasuk was necessary for lokach kohen to tell me that a kohen is necessary. Now, as far as the structure of the psukim, the sequence of psukim, according to Rav, just like previously a Kohen Hedyot was allowed, here too a Kohen Hedyot is the one to do it. So this is not undoing that which was taught previously. Hence we refer to this as Mashma Memela, was that other type of verse sequence we alluded to in our previous year. The Pasuk says, V'chibes Begodov HaKohen, and the reference to Kohen in this Pasuk is Bekihuno. Rashi says this is a Kro Yisera. It could have just as well said V'chibes Begodov. Why does it say V'chibes Begodov HaKohen? I would have known anyway, even if it didn't mention Kohen, I would have known that we're referring to a Kohen. So the added word Kohen tells me Bekihuno means that when he's doing the Pora Duma, he must be wearing priestly clothing, Bigdei Kahuna. The pasuk says v'tomei hakoyen al horev. The double underlines we mentioned in our previous shir, but we're highlighting the psukim from the Porah Aduma section. So the pasuk says v'tomei hakoyen al horev kohen bekihuno l'doros. This pasuk tells me that the future generation of or generations of Porah Aduma also demand the kohen wearing his big day kahuna. Honi cholamanda omar ludoros b'koin hedio shapir. So the teaching we just had is good if you say that in future generations a kohen hedio was suitable for doing the paraduma. So I have to tell you that the kohen hedio in the future generations must be wearing big dekuna. Elolamanda omar ludoros b'koin godol. But according to the opinion that says that in future generations of Porah Aduma, when a Porah Aduma is needed, the officiator of it must be only or exclusively the Kohen Gadol, do I need a pasuk to tell me that he must be wearing his big day Kohen? Hashto Kohen Gadol bo'inon b'kihuno mibaya. I'm telling you that you're restricted to a Kohen Gadol alone. So it's obvious that he would have to be wearing Kohen type clothing. So the Gemara says, "In, you're right that I don't really need to tell you that he must be wearing his priestly clothing. Nevertheless, it writes it anyway in the form of the word HaKohen. Milsa da Asya b'Kavachomer, logic that could be derived, or let's say conclusions that could be derived through Kavachomer logic, Torah v'kosav lo kra. At times, the Torah goes out of its way to write it anyway. And that's what, according to this man, the Omar, that's what the presence of the word HaKohen is doing here. It's not teaching me something new, per se, because I could have figured it out on my own, but the Torah records it anyway. We continue. The Osaf, and we know this is the gathering of the ashes of the Porah Aduma after its carcass was burnt. V'osaf ishtor es efer ha-porah v'hiniach. And there are a couple words here that are going to be the focus of the drosha. Ish, the word ish is lahachshir es hazar, to tell me that for the gathering of the efer, hazar is acceptable. The word tohor is lahachshir es ho'isha, that a woman is acceptable for gathering the ashes. Vihiniach, and this word, which means and they are then placed down. That's mi shiyesh bo das lo niach, someone who has the mental capacity for placing it down. Yatsu cherusheta v'katan, to the exclusion of the deaf mute, the imbecile, and the minor. She'ein bohen das lo niach, they are considered people that are lacking awareness or lacking full knowledge. So the pasuk of that makes reference to ish tahor v'hiniach includes the non kohen and includes the woman for gathering the ashes, but and it excludes the cherusheta v'katan. Tanan hosam, we have a Tanaic source in which it says hakol sherin l'kadesh, everyone is acceptable for l'kadesh. Kadesh is the process where the ash is added to the water, creating what we call the paraduma water, a mixture of ash, paraduma ash, and water. Everyone is acceptable for this, to putting the adding the ash to the water, except chutz micherisheta v'katan. Rabbi Yehuda machshir v'katan. Uposel beisha ubandreginus. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with the Tanakhama on two points. He says that the koton is acceptable, whereas the Tanakhama, the first opinion, excluded a koton. And Rabbi Yehuda precludes or excludes a woman and an androgynous. That's an androgynous, someone who has both gender signs. My taimo de Rabbonan. So what's the basis of the Rabbonan? Dichtiv, the Pasuk says in the context of Kiddush v'lokhu latomei me'afar sreifas hachatos. It goes on in the pasuk to say v'nosan olav mayim chayim el keli. And we darshan hanoch de pasli loch ba'asifa, pasli loch bekidush. Those that were found to be disqualified for asifa, and that included the chirishet of a katan, they are disqualified for kiddush. They can't add the ash to the water. Vanoch the achshri loch basifa, those that were acceptable for asifa, meaning we included the zar and the isha, so achshri loch the kiddush. I will accept them as well for kiddush. And hence, in the source, you could see that a woman was included, and certainly the czar, and only the minor was excluded. We say, along with the cheresh and shoyte. V'Rebbe Yehuda, now Rebbe Yehuda, who disagrees, he says, Im kain, if as you claim, then lema kro v'lokach, my v'lokhu, why the plural expression, tafilu koton. The point here in the case of kiddush is to say that even a minor, the pasli loch hasam, that I excluded in the case of asifa, gathering, so hacha kosher. Here, with regard to kiddush, the katan is acceptable. The Gemara continues, isha minole, from where does he know that a woman is unacceptable for kiddush, for adding the ash to the water? The pasuk says vinosan in the masculine, velo vinosna, and it doesn't say it in the feminine. So vinosan, velo vinosna. The vinosan is exclusive of the woman. Virabonan. Now the rabonan, they included a woman. Now the rabonan respond to Rebbe Yehuda's proof to his position. Rebbe Yehuda tried to prove his position from the presence of the word v'lokhu, comes to include, as far as Rebbe Yehuda was concerned, that comes to include the minor. So the Rabbonon respond to Rebbe Yehuda, and the grammatical elements of his proof. Rabbonon, they say, I kosav rachmona v'lokach and v'nosan, had there been grammatical balance in the pasuk, and we have the pasuk quoted a few lines up, which had read v'lokhu la tome me'afas reves achatos v'nosan lo v'mayim chayim okeli. So, had the pasuk been written in total singular form, instead of v'lokhu, which it says, it would have read v'lokach la tome me'afas reves achatos. And had it been balanced grammatically, v'lokach v'nosan, the word v'nosan actually does appear in the pasuk. So hav amina, I would have thought ad shokil chad yoyev chad. Literally, it means until one gathers the ash and one adds the water, but adds the ash to the water. The more accurate explanation of this hav amina is that I would have thought that the same person that does one does the other. Therefore, kosav rachmona v'lokhu. So, according to the Rabbanan, the word v'lokhu is not coming to include a minor, but rather it's coming to tell me that the person who does the gathering doesn't have to be the very same person who does the mixing of the water and ash. When we say gathering, we're talking about the gathering of the ash from where the carcass was burnt. So the point is, v'lokhu, that you don't have to have the same person doing both. V'i kosav rachmona v'lokhu v'nosnu, had the posuk been once again balanced where both verbs appear in the plural form, hava mina, I would have thought, ad deshakli trei v'avi trei, until you have two people gathering and two people involved in the mixing of the ash with the water. Therefore, kosav rachmona v'lokhu v'nosan. So you have the first word in the plural and the next verb in the singular. Dafilu shakli trei v'yohiv chad. Even to include a case where even if two do the gathering and one person is involved with adding the ash to the water. The pasuk says, with regard to hazah is the sprinkling of the mei por aduma on the person who needs it for his purification. The pasuk says regarding hazah, v'lokach ezoiv v'taval b'mayim ish tahor l'rabonan ish v'lo isha. According to the rabbanan, that had learned the previous pasuk in the context of Kiddush, they included the woman. So here you have a pasuk that follows and it's undoing that. In other words, it's excluding the woman. And we refer to this as mashma motzi miad mashma. Here you have a pasuk speaking about the woman in a contrary let's say approach to that which the woman was referred to earlier. So the pasuk is saying ish v'lo isha, and the word tahor equals lahachshir es hakotan, that for hazah a kotan would be acceptable. Again, this is contrary to what we had in the previous stage. In here we're being machshir the kotan, whereas in the previous stage the kotan was amongst those that were unfit. Ule Rabbi Yehuda, ish equals velo kotan. According to Rabbi Yehuda, for the hazah, the word ish in the pasuk excludes a minor. Tahar equals lahachshir es ha'isha, but a woman is acceptable for hazah. Mesve, a Tanaic source. There's no name in this source. It says Alkol Ksherim Lahazos. Everyone is acceptable for sprinkling. We're talking about sprinkling the Mei Por Aduma on the client, on the person who needs it for purification. Now, who's included in everyone is suitable? That would seem to say include a Koton. Chutz Mitumtum V'Andreginis V'Isha. These people, the Tumtum is a person whose gender signs are covered up. Androgynous is the double gender looking individual, and the Isha. So they are not acceptable for hazah. The koton she'ein bo das isha misayato umaze. A koton who we just said is suitable, let's say doesn't have knowledge or awareness of what to do, so he can do it even if a woman is she who is helping him out. So you can have a woman standing by this very young child and explaining what needs to be done, and he can do it. And that's the sprinkling on the client, on the person who needs purification. So that's what's taught in this source, but the source was brought in as a kasha. In this source, it says, Hakol Ksherim Lazos, and we're saying including a koton. And at the top, v'lo polig Rabbi Yehuda, you don't see Rabbi Yehuda arguing to say that the koton is to be excluded. So how can you tell me, four lines from the bottom of Amud Aleph, that according to Rabbi Yehuda, ish v'lo koton, where you have a source here that a koton is acceptable? Omar Abaye. Abaye answers. But before we get to the answer, let us look at the Rashi at the bottom of Amud Aleph. Ula Rebbe Yehuda, three lines from the bottom. According to Rebbe Yehuda, Diomar Isha Psula B'Kiddush. Kiddush is the adding of the ash to the water. The woman is unacceptable for that. V'Koton Kosher. Also, Hai, here we come to the next stage, the Hazor, the sprinkling, L'Meimra Ibcha, to say the opposite. Ish V'Lo Koton, only an adult and not a minor. Tohor means L'Hachshir Isha, to include the woman. The Al Korchach Lekol Meimar, you therefore have to conclude as far as the sequence of the psukim are concerned. So you cannot say Demashma Memela, that what we're saying at this stage is simply a confirmation of that which was done, or an affirmation of that which was done in the previous stage. The im kain, if that were the case, then lishtok minei, then the pasuk would not have had to make any reference to begin with. So the fact that the pasuk is making a reference, it's doing so to the contrary of what who was qualified in the previous stage. So Rashi lays it out very clearly that in Kiddush, Rabbi Yehuda had said the Isha is unfit and the Katan is acceptable. With regard to the Hazor, it is the opposite. The Katan is excluded and the woman is included for this. The problem that we have is that we have this source that says that the Katan is acceptable, and that we're talking here about Hazor. Well, how could it then be that Rabbi Yehuda would have excluded the Katan? Here you have a source including the Katan as being acceptable, and as the Gemara continues at the top of Amud Beis, v'lo polig Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda doesn't argue. So the Gemara answers, Omar Abaye, Kevan di Omar Mar, since it was taught already that the psukim sequence, Mashma Motzi Miad Mashma, Mashma Memela, and here, as we saw in Rashi at the bottom of Omid Aleph, the pasuk could not be understood as Mashma Memela to simply continue that which had taken place in the previous stage. Previous stage was the Kiddush, and here we're talking about the Hazor. And Rashi pointed out, because if it were Mashma Memela, just continuing that which had been established in the previous stage, in this case of Kiddush, there would not have to be any reference to the Isha and the Katan. But the fact that the Pasuk, in its extra words, does allude to them, it must be that it's coming to undo that which was before. Therefore, in the source, which says that a Katan is acceptable for Hazor, but since Rabbi Yehuda says Mashma Motzi Miad Mashma, it would have to be that the Katan is excluded, because in the previous stage the Katan was acceptable. Therefore, if in this stage the Katan was also acceptable, the Torah didn't have to spell that out. If the Torah is using words to allude to the Katan, that must be that it's different than that which was in the previous stage. So since that is the case, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't have to spell out his dissenting opinion. He relies on the psukim. And as we said, you have a situation here of mashma motzi miad mashma. But by virtue of the fact that that's the way the psukim are set up, he then inevitably argues. He is polig. And just to repeat the last point, and since he is polig on the source that said that the cotton was kosher v'azor, well, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with that. And as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, the pasuk that said v'lokach ezel v'tovel b'mayim ish tahor, the word ish there is, in Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, coming to exclude the cotton. V'izor ha-tahor al ha-tomei. The word ha-tahor is a, what we call a kroyaser, it's an extra type word, and therefore it's here to teach us something. Tahor, the fact that he's described as he who is pure, mechlal shu tomei. It's a type of an overkill. If you're describing him as already tahor, it must be that there's an element of impurity associated with this person. And this teaches us al tavul yoim shekosher b'parah. It tells me that someone who is just become tor, meaning he's just left his tumah, it's really a reference to a tavul yom. This is a person that had been tameh, and he went to the mikveh at the end of his tumah period, but he hasn't had sundown yet. So the pasuk tells me that someone who is a tavul yom, who isn't fully tahor, He hasn't achieved full purification, being that he's prior to sundown. It tells me that that such a person who is called a tvuyom shekosher b'para, he is acceptable for doing the processing the para duma. Just this is another point that we made reference to earlier, being that the para duma was not a korban, wasn't a sacrifice, so don't be amazed then that we're saying that a tvuyom is acceptable for processing the para. Omar Ravasi, ki havu bo Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish bepara. That means when Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish would be studying and medakdek and analyzing this parsha in the Torah dealing with the paraduma, lo maski mino elo kemai demasik talo mibei karbo. Very nice expression that we should we'll translate and then apply it. When Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish would study this parsha dealing with the paraduma, they wouldn't get take away from it any more than what a talos, a fox, takes away from a freshly plowed field. In other words, there's nothing growing in the field; it's been freshly plowed, and a fox comes and trods through the field. It's a little dust is stuck to his feet, but that's about it. Nothing more, nothing of significance. So the Gemara Rav Asi is pointing out that when Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish would analyze this parsha, they would get no sense of consistency in terms of the progression of verses from one to the next. So they would get nothing out of it in that sense. Or as the Gemara says, no more than a fox gets out of a freshly plowed field. Elo Amri, but rather the approach to the Parsha is, as we said before, Mashma Motzim Yad Mashma. There are subsequent psukim that undo the intention of the previous pasuk, and umashma mela. And there are psukim here in parsha of Pora Aduma that substantiate that which was said before. We continue now with an old topic, and on the side we have noted under the nosei heading Shitas Rabbi Yochanan beinyan Shitas Pora Aduma ayadei zar. We're going to look at Rabbi Yochanan's opinion regarding this issue of the slaughtering of the paraduma by a non-kohen. Toni Tano Kameid Rabbi Yochanan. Someone stated a Tanaic source in the presence of Rabbi Yochanan, and it read, Kol hashchitos ksheros bizar chutz mishal para. All slaughterings are acceptable, even if a non-kohen does them, with the exception of the slaughtering of the red heifer. Amali Rabbi Yochanan. Upon hearing this, Rabbi Yochanan reacts as poke toni livra. Poke is take out your teaching, toni, your teaching, livra, to the outside. In other words, discard your teaching. Lo motzinu shchita bazar psula. We don't have any precedent for slaughtering done by a non-kohen and that rendering it unfit. So how can you say that the zar would render it unfit? Rabbi Yochanan, and now the Gemara looks at Rabbi Yochanan and says, Lo mibaya latano de lotzai, it's not only does he not concede to what's taught in this Tanaic source, Elo afilu l'rabbe lotzai, Rabbi Yochanan doesn't even heed the words of his teacher. The Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yehotzadik, we dashed underline his name to draw your attention that he is the teacher of Rabbi Yochanan. Shchitas para bizar psula. You see that Reb Shimon ben Yotzadik says, just like we saw in the Tanaic source, that a zar is not acceptable for paraduma slaughtering. Reb Shimon ben Yotzadik says the same thing. A zar is unacceptable for the paraduma slaughtering. V'ani omer, this dashed underline is a reference to Reb Yochanan. I hold kshera. That why? Lo matzinu shchita shepsula bazar. So you see Rabbi Yochanan in his, we'll say, full strength, arguing with his predecessor, arguing with Rabbi Shimon Yotzadik, saying that the Shechita Bazar, even by the Paraduma, must be acceptable. Bo loy etzel poro shnia. This is a reference to, it's a quote from the Mishnah back on Mem Aleph from it Beis. The Kohen Gadol draws near unto his cow a second time. And in, we see in the Mishnah that there's this second confessional that takes place. What is different about the first confessional where he doesn't make reference to the other kohanim, that's Bnei Aaron Am Kedoshecha, Maishna Bavidui Sheni, but in the second round of confession, Tiomar, as we saw in the Mishnah, he says, Uvnei Aaron Am Kedoshecha, and the children of Aaron, your holy people. Why? Once again, why in the first confessional he doesn't make reference to the other kehanim, and in the second one he does? Tono debe Rabbi Shmuel. Kach hi midas hadin nosenes. This is an expression. Midas hadin nosenes means a logical or proper thought would lead you to this conclusion. Mutav yovo zakai v'yichaper al hachayav v'al yovo chayav v'yichaper al hachayav. We want to establish first that the Kohen Gadol himself is atoned for, and as a person with zakai, who is free from sin, so to speak, he's been atoned for, he is worthy of seeking the atonement of others. However, someone who himself is sin-laden, how can you expect someone like that to come and seek atonement for other people that are full of sins? So in the first confessional, first he cleanses himself, so to speak. He atones for himself. And then he is fit to atone for others. And that's what happens in the Vidui Sheni. Before we continue with this Mishnah, and you'll notice that it's a rather long Mishnah, taking it down to practically the end of the Omid, on the side of our Gemara, we have under our Nosei heading, Achrei Shchitas Poro. After the slaughtering of the cow, HaKohen Gadol Oleh Mizbeach, the Kohen Gadol then ascends the ramp leading to the top of the Mizbeach, and he goes up to the Mizbeach. For what purpose? Lahorid Misham Gecholim Likturas. To remove, to take down from the top of the Mizbeach, coals that will be used for the Yom Kippur incense offering. Structurally, a few lines into the Mishnah, we start a long series of double underlines, which highlight the expression B'chol Yoim, and following that, you'll notice there's a dashed underline V'hayom. So B'chol is this. What is the point here? Hevdelim bein k'turis shebechol yom l'k'turis shel yom kippurim. We'll be focusing on differences between the Yom Kippur incense and the daily incense. There was a daily Torah offering twice a day in the Hechal. Nevertheless, the Yom Kippur Torah is different. The Mishnah, now we look at the Mishnah. Shochtoi v'kibel b'mazreik or b'mizrok es domo. The Kohen Gadol shechted his par, his cow offering, and received the blood in the Mizrach, the blood-receiving vessel. V'nosno l'mi shehu memores bo. And then, after he has the blood in a receptacle, it's then given to a person who is memores. Memores means who will stir it to prevent coagulation. So he's memores bo al haroivet harvi shebahechal. And he's standing on the fourth row of stones that formed the floor. The floor of the Beis Hamikdash was paved with rows and rows of stones. So he was standing. He would then give the blood that needs to remain liquid until later. He gives the blood to a person who will hold it and stir it. And the Mishnah says that this person is al roivin horavi shebehechal, and which on the superficial level would mean on the fourth row of stones in the hechal. Kedei shulikrush. The purpose of this stirring was that the blood should not coagulate. Notal machto. So just to repeat the scenario, you have someone who's right now standing on a fourth row of stones, stirring the blood, and what does the Kohen Gadol do now? So, Notal Machto, he takes a pan for Olo L'Rosh HaMizbeach, and he rises to the top of the altar. Upona Gecholim Eilechveth, and then he splits, he pushes aside the coals some to this side and some to that side. V'choyte Amin HaMe'uch Kolos HaPnimos, and then he digs in to the inner coals that are most consumed, and he gathers them in this pan. That's v'chote. That's to dig in and gather them in this pan. And v'yorad v'hinicho al haroved horvi shebazora. He then descended the mizbeach and placed this coal receptacle on the fourth row of stones in the courtyard. On a daily basis, when seeking the coals for the Torahs, he would dig them out with a silver vessel, that's kesef, and pour them into a golden vessel. That's what happened on a daily basis. And nowadays, the gathering of the coals is using a gold vessel, which itself was brought into the Holy of Holies. B'chol yom chote b'shel arbas kavin umara l'stoich shloishes kavin. On the daily incense basis, he would gather up coals in a vessel holding four kav. There are six kav in one saw, so this is 2/3 of a saw. And then umara l'stoich shloishes kavin, and then pour into another vessel that held actually only three kav. Vayom, now on Yom Kippur, chote b'shloshes kavin ubo hoya machnas. He digs out the coals using a pan that holds three kav, and that it's in with that he entered the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Rabbi Yossi, he is a second opinion with regard to the coal quantities. He says, "B'chol yoim chayte b'shel se'ah umara b'soich shloishes kavin." On a daily basis, he would gather up coals to the tune of a se'ah and pour it into a vessel holding three kav. Three kav is essentially half a se'ah, so it'd be some waste coals as well that would fall to the side. V'hayom chayte b'shloishes kavin ubo. And now on Yom Kippur, he gathers it in a vessel holding three kav, and with that vessel he entered the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now, this, by the way, as Hayom Chote B'Shoshes Kav, and we pointed out that's like the Tanakama as well. And as Rabbi Yossi agrees with the Tanakama on that point. On a daily basis, the pan was heavy. Today, it was light. Today, on Yom Kippur. On a daily basis, the handle of the pan was short. Today, it was long. So long that it would one end reached under his armpit. B'chol yom, Hoysa Zahava Yoroik Vayom Odoim Divrei Rabbi Menachem. There's a sugya later in the Gemara dealing with different kinds of golds. Gold is a valuable metal, and within gold there are different qualities. So on a daily basis the pan was called Yorok, that type of Zahav, and today Odoim. Odom is often translated as red, but it's a certain U in the gold. Bechol yoim makriv pras b'shachris u'pras b'arbayim. as far as quantity of incense is concerned, every day there would be a process, a half a mona, and that's a measure of the incense in the morning, and a half a mona also in the late afternoon vayoyim. And now on Yom Kippur, moisif maloi chofonov, the chofen is a double hands full, so that is an additional amount of incense material that needs to be supplied. In Bechol Yom, Hoysa Daka, on a daily basis, the incense was ground finely. Bayom, on Yom Kippur, Daka Min HaDaka. The standard ground incense was re-ground Erev Yom Kippur. So it's Daka Min HaDaka. It's especially fine. Bechol Yom Kainim Oilim B'Mizrachi Shel Kevesh V'Yodim B'Ma'arovoi. On a daily basis, the Kohanim would rise to the top of the Mizbeach along the eastern edge of the ramp and descend along the western edge of the ramp. The ramp itself was 16 amos wide. Vayom, Kohen Gadol Oila Be'emtza V'yorid Be'emtza. Today, on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol ascends in the middle, like a king walking in the middle of the road. He walks up the middle of the ramp and descends also in the middle of the ramp. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Lo Oilum Kohen Gadol Oila Be'emtza V'yorei Be'emtza. Rabbi Yehuda comments that a Kohen Gadol, not just on Yom Kippur, but any day he happens to rise to the top of the Mizbeach, he can do so by walking through the center of the ramp. B'chol Yom Kohen Gadol Mekadesh Yodav Raglav Menakior. On a daily basis, the Kohen Gadol, when he would sanctify his hands and legs, he would do it from the water, from the kior, the tank in the Azorah. Vayoyim on Yom Kippur min ha-kitoin zhel zahav. Kiton is a flask, a golden flask. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, le'olam kohen gadol mekadesh yodav raglav min ha-kitoin zhel zahav. Rabbi Yehuda says, as far as the kohen gadol is concerned, no distinction is between today and any other day. Kohen gadol always does his kiddush yadayim v'raglayim from this golden flask. Bechol Yoim Hoyu Shom Arba Maruchas Vayom Chomesh Rabbi Meir. There are a series of opinions, and we've numbered them. You can see 1 through 3. How many fireplaces were located on the top of the Mizbeach? So, opinion number 1 says, on a daily basis, there were 4 separate fireplaces, and on Yom Kippur, an added 5th fireplace. And from that added fireplace, so the coals will be withdrawn for the Ktores. Rabbi Yossi Omer B'chol Yom Sholosh V'Yom Arba. He drops a level. Every day there were 3 fireplaces, and on Yom Kippur a 4th one. And Rabbi Omer B'chol Yom Shtayim V'Yom Sholosh. Every day there were 2 fireplaces on the top of the Mizbeach, and today on Yom Kippur a 3rd one. The Gemara is referring to that which was mentioned quite a bit earlier. There's an arrow to the side of the Gemara text. You can align this with above, with what you saw above. There was a reference to a person standing on the 4th row of stones in the Heichal to stir the blood, keeping it from getting coagulated. Now, when was he standing there? He was standing there while the Ktoras was being offered, while the Yom Kippur Ktoras was being offered. So this raises a question. Voxiv, do we not have a pasuk that teaches that no person should be in the oil moed, in the heichal, when the Ktoras is being offered? So how can you have this fellow stirring the blood on the 4th row of floor stones in the heichal when that he's, no one's allowed to be there? Omar Rav Yuda Tani Shel Heichal. Instead of what it says in the original source, Shebaheichal, fourth row of stones in the Heichal, it does. You should read it differently. It's rather Shel Heichal, means it's 4 rows of floor stones in the Azora as you count away from the Heichal. So as you count 4 rows away from the Heichal in the Azora, that's where this blood stirrer was located. Tonu Rabbonan. Now we have brackets around Boyel Moed because initially we're looking at the words V'chol Odom Lo Yeh, no one shall be. The Gemara continues at the top of Mem Dalet Omer Aleph. Yachol afilu bazora? You say no one shall be. Does that mean that the entire temple courtyard has to be cleared out when the Kohen Gadol is offering the Torah? Talmud Lomar, the Pasuk therefore adds, Be'oyel Moed. So, V'cho Adam lo yeh, Be'oyel Moed. Our objection simply is to have other people in the Oyel Moed at the time the Kohen Gadol is doing the Ktores. But nothing wrong with them being in the Azora. Ein li'ela Be'oyel Moed Sheva Midbar. Well, the Pasuk itself is referring to the Oyel Moed of the Mishkan that traveled with them in the desert during their exodus from Mitzrayim. What about Shiloh Ubei Solomon Minayin? So how do we know that this rule applies to Shiloh, which was the site of the Mishkan that stood there for 369 years, and the subsequent Beis HaMikdash? How do we know this rule applies of no one being there? Talmud Lomar Ba'Kodesh. The Pasuk used the word Ba'Kodesh, meaning in that which is holy, including the Mishkan and Shiloh and the Beis HaMikdash, not just the Mishkan and the Midbar. Ein li ela b'shas haktorah. If I had this pasuk, I would think that only refers to when the incense is being offered. B'shas matan domin minayin. How do we know that when the blood is being sprinkled in the heichal, that no one shall be there as well? Talmud Lomar, Bevoyoi Lechaper. The Pasuk says, and upon his entering for atonement. Atonement is through the sprinkling of the blood. In the Elo Bekinisoso, I understand that's only with regard to when he enters, when the Kohen Gadol enters the Heichal, so no one else should be there. Bitsiyosu Minai, and how about at the point in time for him to exit the Heichal? Likewise, that no one should be there. Talmud Lomar, Ad Tseiso. It says in the Pasuk that no one shall be there, Atzis, until he leaves. V'chiper ba'ado v'ad beiso v'ad kol kahal Yisrael. That's what it says in the Pasuk. And we have in this Pasuk it broken down to you have ba'ado u'ba'ad beiso and ba'ad kol kahal Yisrael. So we learn kaporosoi kedemes lekaporosoi echov koyanim, his own atonement, that's ba'ado for himself, precedes the atonement for the other koyanim. Kaporosoi echov koyanim kedemes lekaporos kol kahal Yisrael, and the atonement of the fellow kohanim precedes the atonement for the rest of Israel. Now the Gemara looks into some aspects of this source. Omar Mar, ein li ela b'shas haktorah. The source said, I know that no one else shall be in the Heichal at the time of the offering of the incense. Well, how does the source know that? My mashma, where do you see this in the words of the psukim? So the Gemara answers, you'll notice we have a long answer marking. Omar Rava, v'chein omar Rav Yitzchok bar Avdimi, v'chein omar Rav Elazar. Omar Kro, so you have a series of Rabbonim here that quote the Pasuk, V'chiper ba'ado v'ad besa v'ad kol kal Yisrael. In looking at this Pasuk, Ezu kapora sheshavaloi le'echav ha'koinim u'l'chol kal Yisrael. What atonement is equal to or shared by all? The Kohen Gadol, fellow Kohanim, and the rest of kal Yisrael. Hevi Omer, Zeh Haktores. That's a reference to the Ktores. It's a Haktores, Haktores. So when the Pasuk says that there shall be no one in there when he is offering the Ktores, that's what the Pasuk is saying. The Pasuk is referring to the Ktores offering, the incense offering, and at that point, no one shall be there. The Gemara asks, Uktores mi mechapro? How can you say that this Pasuk that says v'chiper ba'ado v'ad beis v'alko Yisrael is a reference to the offering of the Ktoras? Does the Ktoras, is that a source of atonement? Or says in, yes, the Ktoras is mechaper. The ha'atoni Rabbi Chananya. Rabbi Chananya has the following teaching. Lo madin l'ktoras shemechaperes. We learned that the Ktoras atones. Shenamar, the Pasuk, the context of the Pasuk is where there was a plague after the Korach rebellion. So it says, "Vayitain es haktoras v'yachaper al ha'om." and he placed down the incense. He made an incense offering, and that atoned for the people. V'tonei Rebbe Shmuel, al ma k'toras mechaperes, al loshon hara. The k'toras atones for evil speech. And we learn, and what's the connection? Yavo dover shebechashoi, let that which is processed in the inner sanctum, and literally chashoi means in a hidden way, no one is around in the heichal, when the Kohen Gadol is offering the incense in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. So it's a type of secretive thing. So let something that's secretive come, v'yechaper al ma'ase chashoi, and come to atone for Lashon Hara, which generally speaking is spoken in private, and it needs atonement. And so therefore, something else that has a characteristic of privacy, the K'tores, shall come and atone for the sin that has this element of privacy to it. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.